Permission granted.
Thank you.
Translation, mind your Lord, you manifest your different energies in countless forms as living entities born from wombs, from eggs, and from perspiration, as plants and trees that grow out of the earth, as all living entities, both moving and standing, including demigods, large states, and vitas, outer space, as planetary system containing heavenly planets, as the planet Earth with its hills, the seas, oceans, and islands, be all the stars and planets are simply manifest of your different energies. But originally you are one, without a second. Therefore, there's nothing beyond you. This entire cosmic manifestation, therefore, not false, but simply a temporary manifestation of your inconceivable energy. Therefore, this verse completely rejects the theory of Brahma Satyam Jagat Nitya, which states that spirit of Brahman is real, whereas the manifestation of material world with great variety of things is false. Nothing is false. One thing may be permanent and another temporary, but both the permanent and temporary are facts. For example, if someone becomes angry for a certain period, no one can see that this anger is false. It is simply temporary. Everything we experience in our daily lives is of the same character. It's temporary but real. The different kinds of living entities coming from various sources are very clearly described in this verse. Some are born from the womb, some from human perspiration, others hatch from eggs, and still others sprout from the earth. A living entity takes birth under different circumstances according to its past activities. Though the body of the living entity is material, it is never false. No one will accept the argument that since the person's material body is false, murder has no repercussions. Our temporary bodies are given to us according to our karma, and must remain our given bodies to enjoy the pains and pleasures of life. Our bodies cannot be called false, they're all temporary. In other words, the energy of the Supreme Lord is as permanent as the Lord Himself, although the energy is sometimes manifest and sometimes not. As summarized in the Vedas, Sarvam Kalpitam Brahma, everything is Brahma. Text 33, O my Lord, your name, form and bodily features are expanded in countless forms. No one can determine exactly how many forms exist. Yet you yourself, in your incarnation as a learned scholar, compilative, and analyze causal manifestation as containing 24 elements. Therefore, if one is interested in Sankhya philosophy, by which one can enumerate the different truths, he must hear from you. Unfortunately, non-devotees simply count the different elements and are ignorant of your eternal, of your actual form. Now, from my respectful basis on you. Prabhupada, philosophers and scientists have been trying to study the entire cosmic situation, have been theorizing, calculating different ways of knowing for millions of years. However, speculative research, work of so-called scientists and philosophers always interrupt when he dies, the laws of nature go on without regard for his work. For billions of years, changes take place in material creation until at last the whole universe is dissolved and remains an unmanifested state. Constant change and destruction is perpetually going on in nature, yet the material scientists want to study natural laws without knowing the Supreme Personality of God in the background of nature. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, this material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and it is producing all moving and non-moving beings. By its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. Now the material creation is manifest, eventually be annihilated and remain for millions of years in a dormant state. And finally, it will again be created. This is the law of nature. Translation, my dear Lord, you manifest your different energies in countless forms of living entities born from wombs, from eggs, from perspiration, as plants and trees that grow out of the earth. As all living entities, both moving and non-moving, including the demigods, vernal states, and pitas, and outer space, as higher planetary systems contain the heavenly planets, as the planet Earth with its hills, rivers, seas, oceans, and islands. Indeed, all the stars and planets are simply manifestations of your different energies, but originally you are one, without a second. Therefore, there is nothing beyond you. This entire cosmic manifestation, therefore, not false, but is simply a temporary manifestation of your inconceivable energies. Oh, my Lord, your name, form, and bodily features are expanded in countless forms. No one can determine exactly how many forms exist. You yourself, in your incarnation, as a learned scholar, analyze the cosmic manifestation as containing 24 elements. Therefore, if one is interested in Sankhya philosophy, by which one can enumerate the different truths, he must hear it from you. Unfortunately, non-devotees simply count the different elements and remain ignorant of your actual form. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So these are prayers offered by the to Kroma, actually, by the inhabitants of Varanamaya Varsha, the northern Varsha, north of Mount Meru. And these particular verses, of course, they're not particularly about Kurma as such, but they're actually references to Upanishads, which are part of the Vedas, and Shruti. And as well, of course, this is discussed in the Vedanta Sutras. The Vedanta Sutras are more as a commentary upon Upanishads. So there, in the various Upanishads, we have an enumeration of all the different types of living entities and the elements, etc. So here we have living entities analyzed according to how they're born, that is from wombs, from perspiration, from eggs, or from seeds, etc. So that's one way of analyzing living entities, classifying according to their birth. So in this way we can include all the different types of plants and animals. And then another way is to analyze or divide them according to moving and non-moving. That means plants and animals. Another common way. So that's called chara and achara. Chara means moving, achara means not moving. And then another, of course, is to think of them in terms of the particular forms, and particularly the human-type forms, that is, devatas, pitras, etc. So in this way, we have all the types of living entities mentioned here. This is, of course, not exhaustive, but it's to show that the Supreme Lord is in control of all possible types of living entities, whether they are animals or plants, whatever type of birth they have, or whatever particular form like deva or pitra they have. It's all ultimately from the Supreme Lord. Of course, besides, these are all bodies, of course, with the jiva in them. So besides that, then we have the whole world made out of matter. So we have the senses, etc., and we have the elements. So Indra means senses. So we have Jo, Kam, Shiti. We have the three places, that is, heavenly planets, Kam, which means space, or the ether in between, that is Mubarloka. We have Shiti, Earth. So we have upper, middle, and lower planetary systems, all the different places. And then we have mountains, rivers, etc., islands, planets, constellations, etc. So these are ultimately one. There is one supreme entity, and he's called by these different things, Avijaya, Iti. So all of these things are simply names for one entity. So of course, usually we don't talk like that in Vaishnava discussions. We talk about everything being different, not one. But this is quite common in the Upanishads. So there we have the famous statement, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Everything is Brahman only. And in the Chandogya Upanishad and in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishads, there is discussions like this that say ultimately everything is Brahman. So it is a common feature of the Upanishads to state this. So there are two ways of interpreting this. One is that nothing else exists. Only Brahman exists. Everything else is illusory. That, of course, is Shankara's idea. And he gets that idea because it also says, after enumerating so many things, and then it says, neki, neki, neki. Not so, not so, not so. As if that's all illusory. And then it says, Brahman exists. So therefore he says, nothing is actually true, only Brahman exists. So that is his conclusion. So there is, based on this, of course, the Vedanta Sutra has its commentary, and of course the Acharyas, Vaishnava Acharyas, also argue against this interpretation. So what they say is, no, negation does not, and that does not mean that they don't exist. It means simply that all this is not everything. All that is listed, that is, all of these things, the moving and non-moving, the planets, the sky, the lokas, the rivers and mountains, that is not everything. Beyond that, there is a supreme Lord. So that is how the negation is treated, simply that it is not everything, all that must exist. What this means, therefore, is that the Supreme Lord exists, and these somehow are his expansions. It is supposed to be one, because it also is a sarvam kalvidam brahman. Everything is Brahman. So how can these other things exist if we say only Brahman exists? So therefore, that has to be explained. So of course, one explanation: they don't exist, therefore only Brahman exists. The other is to say, if they do exist, how are they one with Brahman? So that's the whole discussion of in Vedanta, how one can also be many. So this, of course, gives rise to different philosophies like Vishishtadvaita, Advaita, and Achintavaita, or Dvaita Advaita also. And in this way we have different philosophies arising to explain this, different Vaishnava philosophies. Of course, the idea is that the Lord is one in the sense that everything depends on Him. And of course, all Vaishnava acharyas will agree with that also. Everything depends on the Lord, so in that sense there's oneness. Just like we have the sun, and we have the sun rays. If you don't have the sun, you cannot have the sun rays. You cannot separate them and have independent existence of the rays without the sun. So that's dependence. The sun can exist by itself. We just separate the rays, and yes, it'll be okay. Cover up the sun, it has no rays, it still exists. But the rays cannot exist by themselves.
they have the connection with the sun, so they're dependent. So in that sense, everything, and at the same time, it's also one with the sun, in the sense that it emanates from the sun, he's the ultimate cause. So in the same way, the Supreme Lord is the cause of everything. Everything is dependent on him. So therefore, we can say one. It's all one. But at the same time, we know there's some difference. Sun ray is not equal to the sun. We know that. It has qualities, similarities, definitely, but it's different also. There's some differences as well, similarities. So therefore, it's not exactly the same. So in the same way, everything is one with the Lord, but yet there's also difference. So all the things in the material world and the jiva have similarities with the Lord, they also have differences with the Lord. So there's oneness and there's also difference. So this way we have a Chintapeta philosophy also coming out, oneness and difference. So that is how we can explain all this, the oneness and the difference. So we can, of course, emphasize one or the other. If we go to the oneness side, then we can say, yes, everything is one with the Lord, but it exists freely. And then we have Ramanuja's philosophy, Vishishtadvaita. Or we can emphasize the duality aspect over the oneness, and then we have Dvaita philosophy, Madhva's philosophy. Or we can balance the two, and we have Achintyavaita. So in this way, there's an explanation for these statements in the Upanishads about oneness, etc. Why this particular interpretation is there is because if we say everything is illusory, there are some problems with that. If only Brahman exists and everything is illusory. One, of course, is common sense tells us that it's not true, that it's not illusory. That's one thing. Of course, we can argue against that also, but even our arguments would be subject to illusion. So therefore, ultimately the whole argumentation itself would be illusory, and therefore there's no way of getting out of illusion. But we do have, on the other hand, whole philosophies based upon this concept, not only Shankara's philosophy, but also Buddhist philosophy. In fact, Buddhism goes further in some groups. They say nothing exists, not even Brahman. So the final goal is to realize nothing. That's all. There's no Brahman and there's no world, nothing. That is the ultimate nirvana. And of course they'll have logical arguments to support that, but of course those logical arguments can be defeated also this way or that way. So anyway, the discussion goes back and forth like this. But we take the Vedic literature as Pramana authority, because some things are beyond human intelligence. But then we have to analyze and see what actually the Upanishads are saying. Are they really saying only Brahman exists, or are they saying the world exists? So if we take the whole context, then we have to accept, no, it's not saying that nothing else exists. It's only saying that Brahman is superior to everything else, that's all. If we take into consideration all of the Vedic literatures, etc. So, therefore, this is the basis upon which the Acharyas argue. And we take into consideration the whole context of these statements and oneness, etc. And then we come to a conclusion. So that, of course, is what the Vedanta Sutra does. It reasons out things and comes to a conclusion based upon the different evidences. So, therefore, the Vedas talk about oneness. Why? Because this is a glorification of the Supreme Lord. If he is supreme, then he must have control over everything. He must be the final cause, Sarvakarana Karanam. He must be completely different from everything also, exclusive, a special entity. And he should include everything within himself. He's complete, so he should include everything within himself. So that is all expressed by saying the Lord is one, and only the Lord exists. Nevertheless, we do have, even people who accept the Vedic literature, we have people who make counter-theories about this. So, of course, Shankara is very famous. But he's not the only one. So therefore we have here next verse, Sankhya is mentioned about people they analyze the material elements, etc. Into 24 parts, etc. He accepts the authority of the Vedas in one sense, but he comes to a different conclusion. He says, there's no Lord, no Supreme Lord at all. That's his conclusion out of the whole thing. And others, like the logicians, Gautama and Nyayaka, they will say, okay, now we accept the Supreme Lord exists. We also accept the Vedas. They also accept basically the Namas and the Sankhyas. But the Lord doesn't do anything. He's just back there in the background. And everything is done by Jiva and Prakriti. And actually, Prakriti does everything. As the Bhagavad Gita says, everything is done by Prakriti. So that's what they believe. Jiva is there, it's real. Spring Lord is there, but Prakriti is doing everything. Prakriti causes bondage, Prakriti causes liberation. That's their theory. So, and this way we'll have various theories of coming out of accepting the Vedas, but coming out with all sorts of different theories. The Lord exists, the Lord doesn't exist. He exists, but he doesn't do anything. Or he does something, but it's very limited. Prakriti is there, and Prakriti is more powerful than Jiva, etc., or the Supreme Lord. We'll have many, many different theories coming out of them, out of here. But of course, the Vedanta Sutra tries to solve all that, and therefore it defeats all of these different Sankhya and Nyaya and Vaisheshika and Yoga and Buddhism and Jain. It rejects all these philosophies right now. So if we follow Vedanta Sutra, then we must reject all of these theories here completely. That of course was Vyasadeva's intention to clarify the situation of the Upanishads by giving the actual meaning. And Lord Chaitanya has said the Srimad Bhagavatam, because it is the final conclusion of all the Puranas, and the Puranas are actually a summary of the Vedas, including the Upanishads. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on the Brahma Sutras. It should also agree with the conclusions. Yeah? So, therefore, Brahma Sutra is a conclusion of the Upanishads, and Srimad Bhagavatam also is a conclusion of the Upanishads. Must be. So, that is why we'll have references like this, more or less direct references to Vedanta here. Because it is explaining what all this means. What is the Upanishad saying in terms of oneness, etc., and Sankhya and all of this? What does it all mean? So, like the Vedanta Sutra, the Bhagavatam also, again, is explaining that everything is ultimately an expansion of the Supreme Lord. This means, of course, as I said, a little bit of a contradiction, because how can everything be the Supreme Lord? How can everything be one with Him and different from Him? It doesn't make sense, you know? And at the same time, how can matter be spirit? It's contrary. So this is, of course, another big discussion. How can this take place? But then again, this is also answered in terms of, we can say, if we have Mahavishnu and all Prakriti and all Jivas are within Mahavishnu, and they come out and produce material and they go back into Him, in the sense, yes, everything is one with the Lord. And it comes out of the Lord also, even though they're eternal. Jiva is eternal, Prakriti is eternal, but they arise from the Lord and they manifest into different things, the bodies, etc., universes, and they go back into Him again. So ultimately, they're within the Lord, literally, also. So everything is one with the Lord. And that's as they merge into Him, literally. So we can take it that way also, that everything is one with the Lord, and everything comes out of the Lord. Ultimately, by His will. And though everything is within the Lord is never contaminated. If we eat something, bad food, then we get sick. The Lord can contain the whole material world and all the jivas and all their karmas and everything, but nothing happens to Him. He's completely separate from Him. So we can say, how is that possible? Because He's a Supreme Lord. He has special powers. He's not affected by material world. That's His definition. So no matter how much material world is within the Lord, nothing happens. He's completely separate from Him. And by his will, everything is manifested, everything is destroyed. And so that's one way it explains oneness, how everything is within the Supreme Lord. And that's exactly what Krishna showed when he opened his mouth and Mother Yashoda saw the universe, of course that's one universe within, and she saw everything within the Supreme Lord, within Krishna. Like Krishna was not affected by that at all. And how is it possible that the whole world can fit inside Krishna? Krishna was sitting on his lap, her lap. And even inside Krishna, she saw Krishna and Yashoda. And how is that possible? So this is the inconceivable power of the Supreme Lord. That yes, he can hold all the universes within him. It doesn't matter. It's not an endeavor for the Supreme Lord to do that. And he can hold everything in it inside him. And he is completely unaffected by it. And he controls it at all times. In other words, all of this is a glorification of the Supreme Lord. How he can be everything. And at the same time, he doesn't have to be affected by it. So yes, he can. He can be the material cause of the world also. He is the material cause in the sense of all the elements, etc. In this sense that his energy is one with him and is actually within him, and he produces it at a certain time by his will. So in this way, we have a glorification of the Lord as the ultimate controller of everything, living and non-living.
And when we talk about Petra Loka, it talks about the ancestors or some Petra Loka, the ancestors Loka or something. Petra Loka means ancestors, old ancestors.
Well, Petra's, that means ancestors are the ones who are father. Any of you describe this for your Pitras or whatever, but Pitras are also a type of being like Devadas with special bodies. And they interlie very nicely in those bodies. So the Pitras to attain a Pitra body is a, say, a punya, like going to Svargaloka or whatever. And you enjoy very nicely there for a long time. And like the Devas, they help on different aspects of supplying different things to the living entity. So the pitras, their special duty is to take the offerings, the pitra offerings, and give it to the suffering jivas. So you make an offering, it goes to the pitras, and it gets to your dead relative or whatever, like the jiva, if they're in hell or wherever they are.
Regarding
that,
do they exist coexistently? At some point in time, that should have come from the spirit.
No, it's defined as eternal. Property is eternal.
That is completely.
It's eternal. But it's dependent on the Lord. And it doesn't manifest anything unless the Lord wills it to. In other words, the Lord says, be invisible, it's invisible.
Then ultimately,
yeah.
Can be put
in
that is eternal.
Huh?
You can ask, I
can be
invisible,
it's
always eternal.
Yeah, you can stay here eternally, definitely. But of course, subject to destruction and pralaya. Where all universes disappear, everything goes subtle, and the jivas lose their gross and subtle bodies, and they sit in Mahavishnu for some time, and they come out again.
And coming back to Pitras, like all the ancestors, it is not necessary the ancestors may go to Pitraloka. And people worship.
No. They go to all sorts of places. They may go to hell, they may just get into another animal body, plant body, human body, etc.
So the people who worship Pitras, they may not be. They don't even know where their ancestors are born to Pitra.
No.
They're in totally wrong conception.
They're worshipping the Pitras to give the offerings to their ancestor wherever they are. That's all. In other words, you make the offering so that you're basically is to get them out of hellish existence. So one assumes they've gone to some hellish planet, and by making your 12-day offerings, gradually you get them out of that hellish position. That's all. So it's not that they're in Pitra Loka. They're in Yamaswapa, maybe. And even if they got a human body or whatever body they got in, they've actually got out of a hellish existence or wherever they are, and they got another body, they do the yearly rites and whatever like that. So those offerings also go to them. And they get some benefit from that also, wherever they are.
What is fully knows that the all jivas, even though their ancestors, jivas, they are having enjoying their karma, their bad karma or good karma. So by offering Pitra Loka, that by offering ceremonies.
That improves their karma. That improves their karma. So they don't have to suffer so much. That's basically what it does. So, in other words, your activities help them. So that improves their karma.
Even but this holds good only for non-devotees. But devotees, they...
No, we don't worship Pitras. Just worship the Lord.
Sarandrasya Shishimad Pavadanti.
Yeah.
Well, the same thing is that the Lord is within everybody as Paramatma. So that also may be inconceivable, because how could one person be everywhere? So he's all-pervading, and he also expands into all the jivas, and he's within everything. So that's also inconceivable. So certain inconceivable things we have to accept as scriptural statements. And, of course, it may be inconceivable, but we can accept it, then we understand the greatness of the Supreme Lord and His powers, that He can contain everything and He can be inside everything, both. And that's exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita: I'm in everything, but I'm not in everything. I'm outside of everything, but I'm not outside of everything. I contain everything, but I don't contain everything. So He makes all these statements. He's both things, because that's His position. He's Supreme Lord. So He can bridge simultaneously be in two opposite states, which is impossible for us. Like if I'm here, I cannot be there, or whatever like that. So the Lord can be inside, He's also the outside. We cannot be inside and outside. We're the outside or inside. A house, for instance. We can't be both places. The Lord can be simultaneously be both. That's inconceivable for us. This, of course, is due to our limited knowledge, our limited perception, and also our misconception. Because it's all based on our vision of space and time also, which is also relative. And even science knows that it's all relative. Time and space is all a relative type of thing, and there's something beyond that also. So we don't know about it, so it's hard for us to conceive, but again, we have to accept that it's our relative vision that makes it look impossible.
Thank you.